Good Sunday morning and welcome to Mind the Gap with Helmed on Eagle FM. It's we're 6 minutes into the hour of 11, and as usual every Sunday here on Eagle FM, your number one talk radio station, we hold it funny, just to, you know, take your pick, depending on whether or not you went to a public or private school. Now, we're here until the hour of one, of course, mixing up humor and, you know, humor, history and music. So, we're gonna start at home and then we go abroad. Now, after I came to learn that, the years in Israel for the most part, spend literal millions of dollars, on public relations to make their countries look nice and sound nice. And we all know when someone is paying money to, you know, to promote themselves as a nice guy, chances are very high they are not that nice. But instead of just, you know, cooking them that way, I decided to deflect that cooking back to ourselves here. And by ourselves, I mean the African continent. Now, what I mean by that is, Africa have got to start to invest, this is just all countries on the African continent and Africa at large. Like, each and every individual country on this continent have got to spend money on public relations. That's where the entertainment industry comes in handy. Now, if you think Hollywood is just rich because they make awesome movies, you're one of those people that must be very new to the world of public relations, because entertainment is the best way to channel your country's image. Why do you think Hollywood works side by side with the Department of Defense? Think about the National Theatre of Namibia or the Film Commission, working side by side with the Ministry of Defense to produce movies that, where aliens are invading and, you know, Namibian Army or Namibian Marine, the Navy, they are always collaborating, bringing together their tech in order to, you know, take down the alien and save the world. Why does that sound familiar? Well, that's pretty much because that's pretty much what every alien invasion movie coming out of Hollywood depicts. And who is always saving the world? The US, of course. And what I find fascinating is how people are always shocked to find out that those movies, which by the way are American made, are always portraying America as the good guy. Well, it's their money, it's their industry. You want them to portray themselves as the bad guys. Really? No one in their right mind would do that. The idea behind bringing together all their industry, all their industry experts and all their investors into this entertainment piece of work, or be it a movie or documentary or a TV series, the idea behind is to make themselves look good. Do you create, let me just give you an example of content creators here. Which one of you content creators create content making fun of yourself as the worst person anyone can associate with on this? No, you don't do that. Of course you create content making yourself look awesome. Now, think of Hollywood as just, one giant content creation scheme. Actually, let's call it an initiative. Could be a scheme if you think of Diddy, but anyway, we're not going to go there. So, why did they come up with this particular topic for today of asking African countries to really pull up their socks? At this point, I'm wondering if we even have socks at all. So I'm going to start with, first of all, we're going to have to get socks. And Uganda is doing great, by the way. Who killed Captain Alex? Excellent piece of work. Excellent. I don't care what you say. Who killed Captain Alex is, shout out to Uganda. Now, why am I saying Africa needs to invest in its own public relations? It's because Africa is terribly, terribly portrayed in most non-African mainstream media. And we're always wondering, why are they doing this? Well, it turns out in the world of entertainment or in the world of public relations, no one can make you look nice. You will have to invest in making you look nice. Just you. I mean, we could come up with, we could come up with our own PR machines, or we could just spend all the time whining over, oh my God, why is Africa always portrayed like this? Because they make a lot of money by making Africa, well, by portraying Africa as broke. Why? Think about an NGO that wants to, to get a lot of money from donors in the Western world. Let's just take the Western world, for example. Why would they come to Africa and take pictures of the, of the metropolis or capital city and everyone dressed nice? No one is going to donate money to that. They will have to go deep in the village, take pictures of people that are, of kids that are playing in the dirt. And because it turns out playing in the dirt is part of growing up here. It's just a cultural difference. It turns out those pictures are sort of like misinterpreted, in a way. Basically, they are sold as, just look at how poor they are. You are not going to just, hold on to your last dollar. I mean, you're not going to say you can't donate just anything you can to help these poor people. No, they're not poor. That's their lifestyle. It's called the village, you moron. Those people have a house in the city. But if they took pictures of your of your kids that are clean in the city, no one is gonna donate money to that. Now, I mean, look, it's diabolical, but it's a very genius way of making money. Make people look broke, and then take a couple of pictures for those people that you are just that you have, according to your societal interpretation in terms of language and actually cultural point of view, that they are poor. Now, once you take all those pictures, go back to your country, find a bunch of rich guys that for some reason have, just are terrible at traveling and exposing themselves to, all cultures across the, across the world. Just tell them, just look at how poor these people are. They could really, just $1 is going to be enough. $1 in US, that's 13 Namibian dollars. Actually, that's 16 Namibian dollars. 16, 17, all the way to 18, depending on the exchange rate of the day. Now, one question. Are we going to sit and start, are we going to continue whining about our, our ways of life being misinterpreted by non-Africans, especially the Western countries, or we are going to fight back by building our own entertainment industries? Because that's the best PR channel. That's the best. Telling the truth in this world is not how you move forward. Let me give you an example before you start throwing a tantrum, because I know today is Sunday and people are just coming out of church, this time. I often, use the explanation of a political campaign or a political candidate campaigning for a certain a political position in his country. Let's just be honest with ourselves here, guys. If politicians told the truth when they are running for office, there's not a single rational person on this planet who would vote for them. They just think about the times before Fish Rot, right? And you have a bunch of politicians that are running for office that are now finding themselves at the center of this whole, Fish Rot scandal. Yeah. Now, just think about let's rewind back to the, to 2010, and 2010 all the way to 2015, really all the way to 2018. Because, the whole balloon popped in 2019, leading up to 2020. And, just showed up at the right time with, with COVID-19. So we had double COVID-19 here in Namibia. Now, think about these guys, any of them running for office in the 20-teens, and they say, you know what? If you vote for me and I find myself in this particular position, oh, yeah. The way I'll buy iPhones with 2 SIM cards, and the way I'll chop money and travel the world, The way I will, ask investors, instead of investing in the country, I'll be asking them to help me pay my pay off my arrears at my private firm. Y'all would have gone nuts. Now, coming back to my public relations, so the same thing is, you know, the same thing can be said for PR on a global stage. No one is going to give you a good image. You're going to have to come up with your own image yourself and defend it with the best lies you can come up with, including your military fighting aliens and your military winning against aliens that showed up with advanced technology, way more advanced, like a billion years ahead of yours, but you managed to defeat them with your gun and a knife, and you even strangled one to death. Like, I know. Now, because I love history, and because I love history, every time that I open social media and scroll through and run into a video of a white guy saying, you know what, before Europeans showed up in Africa, they were just living, you know, they didn't have literature, education, textile, they didn't have any of it. And that doesn't piss me off. I know that, if the country they're coming from managed to brainwash me halfway across the planet, surely they must have done a number on this idiot who is in close proximity to them. So I'm not that much pissed at them. What I'm more pissed off is a bunch of Africans in the comment section agreeing with that point of view that actually it's true. Before Europeans showed up, we were just nothing but, backwards. You realize that's what the doctrine of discovery was based on in the 1450s, right? The Vatican City, actually the Portuguese cooked that up. And the Vatican City provided some of the ingredients that basically, led to the transatlantic slavery, colonialism, you name it. And if you look at the atrocities that were committed throughout this period, as an African, it's embarrassing when you don't know your own history. Because, I mean, your people literally died. And you call yourself, I'm an African, black and proud. But you are the idiot that don't know. Actually, they are Chinese. They are Muslims. They are white people that know your culture and history more than you. But for some reason, well, you think you're the smart one. I hate to break it to you. You are the dumbest one. Congratulations. You are worthy an idiot. Now, every time that we talk about history, we more often, and this is one of the reasons why I don't like African history, because in a way that it appears in most, secondary school history books, it's like, once upon a time, there were no Africans. And then, a couple of years, five, six years, Africans appeared out of nowhere, and they didn't know what to do with their life, let alone their continent. And then Europeans showed up, and colonialism happened. They fought for their liberation struggle, achieved independence, and voila, we are in 2026. Actually, African history goes way back. There is more to African history than colonialism, and that's where you have Eagle FM and Helmut. Just say thank you. And you're welcome on behalf of both of us. Now, our legal system is dominated by something called a Roman Dutch law. Just forget the Dutch part. We know that they actually carried out the transatlantic slavery through their East India Company. Dutch East India, but whatever. There was a British East India Company. There was a Dutch East India Company. Now, these guys were just literally selling people like you are selling, fat cakes. Now, we're not going to focus on the Dutch part. Now, our legal system is dominated, or basically the entire governance structure has some degree of a Greek philosophy to it, but where did the Greek get it? Because there is no such thing as an original idea in the world of ideologies. Most of it is, you know, is built on a foundation. It's just something that is tweaked a little bit to look like it's new, but more often it's built on the foundation of something that, the writer, more often the person that is given credit for putting all these, you know, all this literature together, that writer was inspired by someone else. Now, the Roman Dutch law. If you have, now for those of you that have said in the introduction to law class, you found yourself talking about the 12 tables, and what does where does that lead you? Modern day Turkey, the Byzantine Empire with Justinian the second. For a very long time before 530-something, 532, for a very long time, the Roman Empire was split in two main categories. They had the patricians and the plebeians. That's a Roman imperial, vocabulary of saying broke people and rich people. The patricians were the rich ones. The plebeians were the modern day equivalent of those that cannot afford Poloni. Now, the thing is, all the way, you know, first, and this was just an issue because they had a lot of laws which, were more like, basically protecting a bunch of rich guys than they were protecting a bunch of poor guys. Actually, nothing have changed when you look at it from that perspective. But anyway, now what happens in the 530s, I believe 532, is that Justinian comes along and then he marries a sex worker because, well, men, well, the, you know, love knows no boundaries. And then he promotes her into an empress, and Theodora. Look, she was a state woman. She was a state woman. I think, people just, discredit her on one account that she was, a burlesque dancer. The equivalent of what you'd call, a sex worker, I guess, at this point. But she was insanely good at politics. When she married an emperor, Justinian. That's how she showed just how good she was at politics. Really good. But we're not going to focus on Theodora here now. Justinian the second brings about the codification, aka, let's write things down, guys, because this whole thing of just the law says this, but no one is pointing at a piece of, piece of paper or at least a piece of rock where it is written, is not working. So, Justinian the first, commissions that, the law of the 12 tables. Initially it was supposed to be 10 tables, and then they realized, there are a few things that we left out, and then it was extended to 12 tables, and everything was just written down. Your laws are from there. The Romans, people, we are giving the Romans credit to this day. Shouldn't we give the Romans credit? Oh, we should. They inspired a lot of literature, engineering, and all that. Basically, all aspects of all our lives today. There's just one problem. Everything that we give a credit to the Romans for today, did they come up with it? Maybe they did, maybe they didn't, but I'm gonna argue most of it is copy and paste. Let me give you an example. Mercury is the messenger god of the Romans. Hang on a second, is it Mercury? Let's just start with Zeus. Zeus and Juno are sisters in Greek mythology, and also husband and wife. Long story. Really long, disturbing story. Now, the thing is, the Greek Empire thrived, and when the Greek Empire fell, the Roman Empire was on the rise. Every time an empire falls, a new one is on the rise. The Roman Empire fell, and then Byzantine held in until the 1400s, and then that falls, and then you see a 1400, and you see a power shifting in the direction of the Spanish and the Portuguese. And then fast forward to the 1700s, you see the Spanish and the Portuguese Empire basically on the decline, especially the Spanish Empire, and at the same time the British Empire is on the rise. So empires have come and go, empires rise and fall. So it's not rocket science. Everyone that have picked a history book knows that empires rise and fall. Empires have risen, have reached the peak of their power, and have declined and disappeared into oblivion. It's a beautiful pattern. It's a very beautiful pattern. Now, if you take Zeus, for example, Juno, where you get the word January, is Hera in Roman mythology. So what the Romans basically did was when the Greek Empire fell, they basically took over all their gods and then baptized them in the name of Spiritus Santo and gave them a whole new, Romanian or Christian names. Because Mercury, now Hermes became Mercury, messenger god, and you have Cupid became Cupid in Greek mythology became Eros, like the location Eros, your god of love. Cupid in Greek mythology, Eros in Roman mythology, and you have Hera in Greek mythology, and Juno, aka January, in Roman mythology. When you look at it from that angle, you begin to see just from mythology alone, there is a lot of copying and pasting taking place here from the Greeks. There were a lot of Romanization. The Romans were basically taking a bunch of things that was once belonged to the Greeks, and they renamed everything and then claimed them. Even Hercules became Heracles. Really? Now, why am I taking you that far into the history? Because the point I'm trying to make here is that if this is what the Romans did, are we sure the Greeks didn't do the same thing to the, when the Persian Empire fell? The Medes and Persians. And then, are we sure that is not what the, are we sure that's not what the Medo-Persians did with everything that belonged to the Babylonians? And are we sure this whole thing of copying and pasting doesn't take us as far back, at least, as the Sumerians? Original idea, my behind, we have been copying and pasting. Now, the reason why I'm saying let's go back as far as we can with this whole copying and pasting is we give a lot of credit to the Roman Empire when in comparison to a lot of empires where most of this idea could have been copied and pasted from can be traced to, guess where? Africa. And we are back. Now, the Roman Empire began in 27 BC. Now you're saying, oh my God, that must be a very long time because colonialism wouldn't start, at least in a way that we read about it in our history books in relations to Europeans, not the Ottomans. That one is much older. Now, colonialism, in line with the doctrine of discovery and all type of nonsense, wouldn't show up until the 1400s. So here's the thing now. At this point, you're thinking, colonialism was just starting in the 1400 and then got into full swing in 1718 and 1900. So, 1400 AD to 27 BC, clearly we were living in, we didn't have any type of civilization. No wonder the British had to show up here to quote-unquote civilize us. No. Actually, compared to two empires that I'm just going to use as my main source of reference that existed on the African continent. The Carthaginian Empire actually kicked some Roman behinds because they were very good at naval warfare, something the Romans were terrible at. Romans were land guys. If you attack the Romans on land, you're cooked. If you attack the Romans at sea, they were cooked. Now, the mistake they kept making in the beginning was that they kept attacking Carthaginians at sea, and the Carthaginians kept kicking Roman back. Just getting carried away by my history here. Roman behinds, big time. They did defeat them. The Romans did defeat Carthage, and then you're seeing, you know, just this Roman rise here. Now, 27 BC, you have to understand that 27 BC, we are talking about 27 years before Christ. 27 years before Christ. And if you're thinking that's old enough, no, it's not. It is not. Because the kingdom of Kush existed in the region of what was known as Nubia. Nubia was an ancient region and kingdom of northeastern Africa, was situated along the Nile in what is now southern Egypt and northern Sudan. In ancient times, Nubia's location was a strategic point for trade routes connecting Egypt to the Red Sea and other parts of Africa. The kingdom of Kush, a significant power in Nubia, thrived for centuries with a unique Egyptian Nubian culture and shaped African influence. The Kushites, aka the kingdom of Kush. Now, Kushite itself, it's actually a dead language as we speak. There is a lot of literature, African literature, that could actually teach us a lot about who we are as Africans, which you can find in some parts of Ethiopia, you can find some parts, in some parts of Sudan, but the language is dead. You'll have to, to first, understand the language, to understand the literature. But because the language is dead, can you imagine how infuriating that is? There is a piece of literature after literature of who our ancestors were. They literally carved all of it in stone and left it for us. And what did they not see? We are very good at rah rah rah. We can't even read, can you imagine how disappointed our ancestors would be if they came back today? They're like, we wrote this stuff for you and we gave it to you. And you decided to go with rah rah rah. Really? Unfortunately, these are the things that makes me hate the British now. The colonial ones, not a bunch of broke white guys. You guys are fine. Now, Nubia's rich history includes a period Egyptian influence and independence. Nubians were known for their wealth derived from gold mines, trade, and military prowess. Yeah. I know. One of the oldest pyramid in Egypt is the pyramid of pharaoh called Snefru. Now, this is the guy that actually conducted a raid into Nubia and established an Egyptian outpost of Buhen. He conducted these fights with, you wanna guess who? The Kushites. Now, and this empire, actually, the Kushite empire, is so old, it makes the Roman Empire look like the history that you did yesterday. Like, it is that old. Actually, predates a Carthaginian empire. Now that is you have the Kushites that were basically thriving long, like really long. We are talking hundreds of years, about 800, nearly 1,000 years before the Romans would exist. Now, mind you, these are the Romans that you are reading about in the Bible. We are not talking about the Rome today, no. That Rome that you are reading about in the Bible, compared to the kingdom of Cush, your Bible looks like it was written yesterday, compared to that kingdom. And they had thriving trading routes with Asia and, through the Mediterranean with Asia and basically, mostly Asia, and you have the Arabic countries. You are talking about countries where Iraq is today, where Iran is today. Because, of course, they didn't have Iraq and Iran. Well, I don't know about Iraq, but for Iran, there was this thing called Persia, and there was this thing called Tyre. I mean, it was it's that old. Now, every time I read about a piece of African history that predates the Roman Empire by over 800 years, and the British Empire with literally over 1,000 years of civilization. Before the British showed up with what they called civilization, Africa has been having civilization for over 1,000 years before the founding of the empire. And now you have someone, an African, in the comment section of a confused broke white guy somewhere in England or somewhere in the US saying, you know what, if it wasn't for us, you guys would still be living in the... No! Actually, you broke everything. Like, you have you ever wondered why we didn't show up at your shows? It's because we didn't have to. Actually, we did show up at their show. And the Barbarossa brothers, long story. Especially the parts of, the parts of Ireland? Yeah, the Barbarossa brothers. But that was during the Ottoman rule. So that also compared to the Kush and Carthage kingdom, that sounds like it took place yesterday. Music time. Before we come to Carthage, a little bit of time comparison, and then we go back to Rome, and then we'll talk about the stingiest man to ever walk the earth. Hint, hint, it was white. White people gather around. And I'm going to do a little bit of cooking on the other side. I mean, like, really, really, really stingy. And then I'll just cushion the blow with some of the nicest white people. A white couple I had to read about in American history this on Thursday. I almost forgot that it's Sunday and that there's this thing called Muzika. Papa God borrow you.
I wake up this morning, I check the pot. Yesterday food finish, today pot day hot with nothing. Water they boil inside empty pots. Steam they come out. I close the lid. Pretend say something they cook. I count my coins since morning. In no rich transport. I trek 3 miles to work under sun. No escort. My shoe they open mouth. The soul don't separate. I use rubber band hold them. So you no go vibrate. I reach work. My yoga ask why I dey sweat. Oh, oh. I say na exercise. Hunger they make me forget. Oh. Lunchtime, everybody job. I drink water, fill my chest. I tell them I already ate. God forgive me for that jest. Papa, 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 God borrow me 5 billion. Hunger go kill me. Papa, God borrow me 10 billion. Hunger go kill me. If I don't pay. Overdue.
teacher put my child out of class, what I go do? I beg the teacher, give me one more week. She don't hear that one before, she don't even speak. Night time, I kneel down, whole family they sleep. I cry to God quiet, the kind of cry that is deep. My wife ask what we go cook, I say God go provide. She look at me, she look at pot, nothing there inside. Papa, 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 God borrow me 5 billion, hunger go kill me. Papa, 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 God borrow me 10 billion, hunger go kill me. Nothing to show, something no they right. My neighbor they cook, they smell enter my room. I swallow saliva, I pretend say I fool. Boom! I know they give up, but Lord hear my cry. Because hunger no supposed be the reason I die. Just borrow me small, I go work out to pay. And if I feel lost, now devil lead me astray. Papa God borrow me 5 billion, hunger go kill me. Papa God borrow me 10 billion, hunger go kill me.
I know. 7 minutes to the hour of 12. Mind the gap with Helmut on Eagle FM. I swear I'm a comedian. I'm just terrible at hiding it. Actually, I'm not terrible. Actually, it's the opposite. I'm just very good at hiding it. So, what boils my Kavango blood is every time that I look at I come across a video of non-Africans calling Africa, looking, making videos about Africa being, a continent that was just pulled out of darkness, like civilization darkness, by the British and by the British with their colonialism, aka civilizing, quote unquote. First of all, there was no civilizing. There was a lot of looting. That's for sure. You don't civilize people by looting from them. That's how you know they are richer than you. You can only steal from someone who is richer than you. You can't steal from people that are poorer than you. What are you going to steal? Unless you are a capitalist, then you're doing great.
Ritavazende kize imba izwezipiri loyekerize mikwaye nguyencha kukona kunolofaza kwankufisa hamocholo ni mata amskavona kale kana mitukserize kubona msevelezo wa imba ye mufumana lisevelezo zezwezipiri ze ka kulipa fela mashilling ali kana 36 na mibian dollars ka kweli kapa kama mikwaye kutesa fasi yeta kama 5% machipisa hamngo tsari kweli ze talu 10% machipisa hamngo tsari kweli ze sirela 25% machipisa hamngo tsari kweli ze lishimi peri muketeri kweli zo muvata kuri mukone kukala kuikola zendezewo imba imiswalezi fama chipisa imba tokubukanira fasi kaufela muipe kwali sevelezo za imba kachenu kuri mukone kuikola zende kaufela.
So Africans saying, you know what? Before Europeans showed up, we were just nothing. Yeah. Now, that's where my proposal for a PR now comes in. Because that was PR. Civilization. The whole idea of the British civilizing every country that they colonized. First of all, they called it civilizing so they can help themselves sleep better at night. We all do that. We all do that. When you're about to do something stupid, you find an excuse that will make it sound less stupid and start calling it that. They didn't call it colonialism. They called it civilizing. Now, to pull that off, they first had to cook up a history that, the first thing they did was define what are people. They did that in the 1450s with the help of the Vatican. I know, religion shows up everywhere. Wherever there is colonialism, I swear, a religion is there. The Ottomans, the Romans colonized, the Greeks colonized, the Ottomans colonized. It has always been in the name of some god. Isn't it fascinating? And also stupid. Now, let's look at this in a more interesting way. Now, I'm talking about like time frame wise. You see, what sorcery is this? You see, before the even if you just put aside the the Kushite kingdom, and you look at the empire of the empire of Carthage, now those are the new guys. But even they actually thrived for hundreds of years before the Roman Empire would show up. Carthage and Rome. Think of Carthage and Rome in the very same way that you would think about about the US and the British in the 17th to the 1800s. The British Empire was in decline at the time. The American Empire was on the rise. So by 30 to 27 BC, the Carthaginian Empire is also in decline at this point. The Roman Empire is slowly, just showing up and is just picking up. So, again, wherever an empire is falling, another one is on the rise. And the very same way that a lot of historians and a lot of historical and observers and historians are of the opinion that, this American empire that's falling, that's falling, and even the falling is debatable. Deny. I think the Chinese are on the rise. If you look at the technology and the industrial capacity, the Chinese Empire is on the rise. The American Empire, even though a bunch of its leaders are still in denial, is in decline. Now, if you have read one of the most confusing history books that I've ever read, I swear, is The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire by Edward Gibbons. The book outlines something fascinating about how empires fall, that the Roman Empire did not fall, because the book is written on the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire did not fall because of, not mostly because of external issues. It fell mostly because of internal issues. It's internal political squabble that have always weakened the empire. Undiscussed questions. It's like one of those, it's like one of those relationships where you are just pretending like everything is fine by avoiding difficult conversations. Think of it like that, except on a governance level. And then this undiscussed, uncomfortable topic tend to pile up with time, and then it gets to a point where it becomes very difficult to discuss, because not only are they a lot, we're talking about, that's a whole lot of uncomfortability. Now, and then you end up with a situation where you're like, you know what, it's not working out anymore. That didn't happen yesterday. You have been avoiding difficult conversation for decades. And now, the, difficulty has just piled up to the point where it has, threatening the main pillars of the relationship, one of them being communication. Governance is pretty much the same. You know, there's corruption there, and then you throw it under the rug. And there's corruption there, and it's thrown under the rug. And there's corruption there, and it's thrown under the rug. 10, 20 years down the line, you have so much corruption, and everyone in the government have, have done something questionable. So no one can hold anyone accountable. And then they form a cabal of looters instead of governors. And then they just loot the country left, right, and center. And then anyone that questions their looting disappears. And then it, it becomes a looting competition. But there's only so much you can loot. At the end of the day, you find yourself, fighting over something that, fighting over the loot of the country. And then a war breaks out. It all starts with a governance issue. It happened to the British Empire. It happened to the happened to the Spanish Empire. The Spanish Empire is my favorite. The Spanish Empire fell because the Habsburg family liked power so much, they did not allow their relatives, they did not allow each other basically to marry outsiders so that they can keep power within the family. So they kept marrying cousins, niece, aunties, nephews. Quite bold. And by the way, the Spanish didn't start it. Claudius was the uncle that married his niece. Yeah. And the niece had a stepson called Nero. Now that name might sound familiar. Called Nero. And now to make sure that, the power is not shared, the niece uses a mushroom to poison the husband / uncle, and then elevates her son to the to the status of the of emperor. Now my son is in charge. I will not lack anything. Well, the son also was just as greedy of sharing power as the mother. So how I pointed out earlier that the mother poisoned Agrippina, the elder. There is Agrippina, the younger. Long story. Agrippina poisoned her husband / uncle with mushroom. Bro must have liked mushroom. Anyway, and then he was like, you know what? There is no more sharing power now. That's how greedy she was when it comes to power. It turns out the greed for power ran in the family. So once the son was an emperor, Nero was like, right, this whole thing of sharing power with mommy, I don't like this. I hired a bunch of assassins to go and kill the mommy, which they did. And then he decided to just rule as he wanted to rule the empire. You wanna guess what his first order of the day was? Set half the capital on fire. And went like, oh my God, the capital is on fire. Please put off the fire. Anyway, now that the fire is off, all these displaced people, may God go with you. And by the way, you can't come back here now because, this place is burned down, the fire of 64. An interesting part of Italian history. This part just caught fire. Oh my God, I wonder who did this. Now, imagine the pain that the investigators had to go through. They were investigating the fire where one of the main suspects was the emperor. Picture this. Namibia holds an election and then Helmut wins the presidency. And after that, less than a year in office, half of Tura catches fire. And the investigators, the police, when they are investigating the fire, one of the suspects they have on the list of the people that may have caused the fire is His Excellency himself. That must have been a difficult investigation. I can only imagine. Anyway, power is very sweet. People have killed, turns out, their own parents for power. Which makes a lot of sense, though, because if you look at how many, you know, especially just after the liberation struggle, if you, you read African history, how liberation struggle movement figures after independence just started turning on each other and started backstabbing each other in the name of power. Power is sweet because it comes with mula, baba, mula. You know, that thing that makes you afford an iPhone with two SIM cards, that, it comes with a lot of that. And also a lot of influence. And a lot of custom license plate Range Rovers. And a lot of, okay, you know what? I'm going to stop there. So, Carthage. Who were the Carthaginians? Carthage was a major city in antiquity, located in the northern coast of Africa and in modern-day Tunisia, founded by the Phoenicians of Tyre. Yeah, now that is now history. We're talking about 8th century BC. 8th century BCE, actually, yeah. 8th century BCE. Jeez. Holy cow. I mean, it is that old. 8th century BCE. That is just something else. Rome was founded in 27 BC. The Empire of Carthage was thriving. A civilization, the Carthage of the Carthage of civilization. The Carthage is, you know, the Carthage civilization was thriving from 800 to 700 BC. That's more than 500 years before the Roman Empire would show up. You want to guess where that empire was? In Africa. That was actually more than, 700, 800 years before we'd start talking about Jesus Christ. Before we start talking about the Rome that you read about in the Bible. There was an empire that was thriving on the African continent that old. And you wonder why you read about Egypt in your Bible. And you wonder why you read about, you know, Jesus, fleeing to Egypt. The Egypt he ran to, believe me, it's not the Egypt we are looking at today. I mean, 800 years before he was born. Now, the Egypt that we are looking at today, basically much of northern Africa that we are looking at today, was heavily, influenced in a lot of ways, both culturally and racially and education, philosophy, religion, and everything, by the Ottomans, for the most part. And compared to that history, the Ottomans existed 5 minutes ago. See? African history. Turns out to have been civil. And by the way, there is a whole list of African empires. I decided to talk about the West because more often people just talk about the, you know, Mansa Musa and the Mansa Musa in the East. We could just talk about, Sub-Sahara Africa. Oh, yeah. It is that beautiful to know your history. You see, when you know the basics, I'm not a historian. I just, hate going out there for just a read to kill time and play a bunch of video games. Now you know why it really pisses me off. Every time that I come across a piece of, a video about someone saying, you know what, it was the British that civilized. No! We were civilized, like, literally about, over 1,000 years before the British showed up. We were doing just fine. Actually, we were doing just fine until you showed up. Actually, we were doing just fine until the Ottomans showed up, and then we were doing just fine until you showed up. Well, the whole history of human beings has been always about kicking the heck out of each other, and then the winner takes all and rewrites the history, and human beings, I know. We're all just a bunch of idiots, irrespective of your skin color or religion, actually. I don't want to dance alone. 3 minutes into the hour of 12, you're still listening to Mind the Gap with Helmed on Eagle FM, your number one talk radio station. Now, I'm going to take one more song, and then we will come back on the other side and talk about one man whose name you have seen somewhere, but you didn't actually, you didn't know more about the name than you are going to be after the end of this remaining 30 minutes rambling session that I have before I go full DJ. The man we're going to talk about is John Paul Getty. If you have, if you have seen images on the internet, more like with a watermark of the name Getty, aka Getty Images. Now, the owner of that name was an American petroleum industrialist who founded Getty Oil Company in the 1940s. And, he was actually, in the 90s, 80s and, all the way to the 80s and 90s, he was the richest man. Like, he was the Elon Musk of those days. Now, if you are wondering how he became that rich, it's because homeboy was stingy as heck. Look, the word stingy doesn't even get anywhere close to how stingy this man was. But he didn't found the Getty, the Getty Images, the Getty Publishing, the company that gives you, the Getty Images. Now, that would be his grandson. Which is interesting because, today's discussion is going to be based on, discussion of this guy is going to be based on the story that transpired between him and his grandson. Hey. So, what happened? You see, there's this guy called John Paul Getty. John Paul Getty. John Paul Getty was a grandson. Was a grandson of John Paul Getty the Third. Was a grandson of John Paul Getty, the original Stingy Men's Association, the founder of the organization. Actually, the god, the ancestor, the everything of high power of Stingy Men's Association. Now, you see, this man was stingy beyond comprehension. Now, just how stingy was he? Fasten your seatbelt. You see, John Paul Getty III was a grandson of the American oil tycoon, John Paul Getty, who was once the richest man in the world. Now, while living in Rome, John Paul Getty III, not the first guy, the third, the grandson, while living in Rome, in 1973, he was kidnapped by the Drangheta cartel in the criminal, an Italian criminal organization, in the Calabria region. Now, this is the southern part of Italy. You know, that part that is more often associated with mob culture, that part of Italy. Now, this is a son, this is a grandchild of a billionaire, basically. The grandson of the richest. I mean, who wouldn't want to kidnap the grandson of the richest man on the planet? At least that's what the kidnappers thought. You know what? This man is rich. We'll just kidnap his grandson, and then we'll just ask for 17 million US dollars in a ransom, and I mean, he's gonna pay. I mean, he's the richest man alive. Oh no. Oh no. The story goes that when they called, he told them, when the kidnappers called and told, "We have your grandson. You will have to pay $17 million or we're going to do unspeakable things to him. You will never see him again." And bro was like, yeah, at least the story goes, bro went like, "You know what? I have 14 grandkids. If I pay for this one, people will just go around kidnapping every one of them and I'll end up with no money." Oh, they thought he was joking. He wasn't. After a period of time passed, basically, bro was not budging. They kept calling us like, "Maybe you didn't hear me the first time. I ain't giving you nothing. But you are the richest man in the world." Yeah, I am. I didn't become the richest man in the world by giving away money. I became the richest man in the world by becoming the head of the Stingy Men's Association. And that he was. Now, what do you think happened after that? Well, the kidnappers, just to show that they were not playing, they decided to cut off one of the boy's ear and send it to a newspaper, so that the men can get, can be serious about sending them their $17 million ransom that they demanded. Bro was like, all right, you got me. All right, I'm going to send you your man so you can release him. But I can only send you $2.2 million. And there was a week, if not weeks, of telling them, "Look, it's either I send you $2.2 million or I'm not sending you nothing." They released him. I mean, I can only imagine the confusion that these kidnappers were facing. They were like, "Jesus. So this guy is this stingy. I mean, he's the richest man in the world. And he would rather watch his grandson die than lose $17 million. Now, as you know, Hollywood is very good at this. Hollywood decided to make a movie out of that. The movie is called All the Money in the World. It turns out the movie All the Money in the World is based on a true story of a man who was so stingy, they had to send him an ear of his grandchild for him to be serious about paying ransom of his kidnapped grandchild. And even then, he decided to go with in a full diplomatic negotiations swing. Like, you know what, guys? I mean, like I pointed out earlier, I have 14 grandkids. If I pay for one, I'm gonna end up paying for everyone. So, just to tell you that that 17 million you asked for, yeah, not happening. But we have your grandchild. I know. I have 14 of them. You know, if you... that means I have a lot of grandchildren. Now, poor John Paul, John Paul Getty the Third, just, his grandfather initially refused to pay, the story now, his grandfather initially refused to pay after John Paul Getty, Getty the Third's severed ear was received by a newspaper. His grandfather relented to a new demand, lower demand, and Getty was released 5 months after being kidnapped. 5 months. Do you have any idea how that does to you, what that does to you, to a person psychologically? Now, Getty the Third subsequently developed an addiction to alcohol and other drugs, leading to an overdose and stroke in 1981 at the age of just 25. Poor boy. Which left him severely disabled for the rest of his life. 5 months. 5 months. Do you still want to be born in a rich family? So when you are praying that, you know what, I wish I was born in a rich family, you may want to be specific, like which rich family? Because to be rich, you must be stingy. To be rich, you must be stingy. And then some people are more stingy than the others. Now that, my man, is the short story of the most stingiest man on the planet. Now that is the founder Getty Images was founded by, pardon me, by Mark Getty, the son of. The son of John Paul Getty Jr., whose father is John Paul Getty Sr., Stingy Men's Association headquarters, head of department. Jesus. Wow. Oh, we have your son. Like, okay. I have a lot of those. What's your point? You have to send us $17 million or we're going to, you know, you will never see him again. All right. Enjoy. It turns out, it actually makes sense because, bro, John Paul Getty was good at marrying and divorcing as he was, at being stingy. Spouses, Jeanette Demont, 1923-1926, just 3 years, divorce. Ellen Ashby, 1926-1928, 2 years, divorce. Adolphine Helmy, 1928-1932, that's 4 years, divorce. At least that lasted a while. And Anne Rock, 1932-1936, 4 years, divorce. Louis Dudley, 1939-1958, divorce. I think they kept asking for money. And was like, did you just say you bought something with my money? Oh, yeah, sign here. It's over between us. Wife number two. You have donated what to charity? Oh, yeah, sign here. Have a good life. You bought milk without my permission? Excuse me, you threw away a 5 cent? Oh, yeah, sign here. Goodbye. And then he decided, you know what, this whole getting married thing is not working for me. You know, I'll just, well, I would just, you know, get laid wherever I can. And then got laid number one, number two, number three, number four, oh, bro, was just something else. And had five children. Just five children. And how many wives? One, two, three, four, five. I mean, it makes sense. Yeah. Five wives, five children. Bro was just like, all right, now that we have a kid, I'm gonna need a new wife. Goodbye. Wife number two. Right. Oh my God. Oh, you're pregnant. Congratulations. Oh, okay. Well, you've given birth. Ah, yeah, nice. That's nice. I think the divorce kept being signed because the women kept buying diapers. How dare they? What a waste of money. Wow. Really? Jesus. Yeah. You know, this is one of those grandparents that will, before sending you to the shop to buy something for them, they will send you to go to the shop first to check the price, and then you come home and then you tell them the price, and then they will give you the amount of money equivalent to that exact price so that you can go and buy. We all have family members like that. We all have family members like that. Or it's just me, nah? Just can't be me and Getty. There's a cheese, bro. I mean, this is the, I mean, talk about taking Stingy Men's Association to a whole another level. Everybody go to breakfast.
You go power for the result, nothing to discuss, cause I did win by default and without any doubt. I'm a me happy adult, I no go feed the girl, I no go feed the girl, it's out. I'm a mind that's really dark, I put my life into my job and I know I'm in trouble. She manipulate my love, oh. I know holy and I know that kebo, that the baba fry, oh. Kills Obama. I dey try to buy moto, one Toyota Corolla. My feelings been dey swing like Django Loba. Feelings been dey swing like Django Loba. Now you crash your Ferrari for Lucky Bona. Now see Martin remake with that pain all over. My feelings today swing like Django Loba. Feelings today swing like Tip Tip Timbani. Catch you. Come on, why don't you finish soon? Why you say I did nothing for you? If I do anything you want me to do, Timbani get you, at you. I'm a white dog in Venice. Why you say I did nothing for you? If I do anything you want me to do, maybe another time, maybe another life. You will be my wife and we'll get it right. Young cars, last. Now everybody go to your breakfast. I have to say bye-bye, yo.
Some live for the bill, some kill for the bill.
Mr. Getty would have loved this song.
She whined for the bill, grind for the bill.
Oh, she used to be sweet.
Some steal for the bill, if they gotta pay the bill.
Yeah. She used to be
too nice, white cleft, fake on. We see on the bill.
Oh. Ask who she was that girl that made me do the hula hoop around the gym.
Just a girl pick up it, she said.
Ask who she was that girl that made me do the hula hoop around the gym.
Again, she's a
never thought that she would come and work for the president.
Just a George Washington,
Mona
Mania.
She falls, he calls. She had a good day, bad day, sunny day, rainy day. All you wanna know is
Mona Mania.
Close leg, don't get fake. Go out there and make my bread. All you wanna know is
Mona Mania.
She ended up in a roll call, bruised up, scarred heart. All you wanna know is
like who told me cash rules everything around me, singing Dala Dala Belly, yeah. Yeah, Mr. Getty would have loved that. So, white people, gather around. I came across an interesting story yesterday on social media of a white couple that got into trouble in the 1950s because they were being nice to a black man. Now, I bring this up because, you see, every time a government is like, every time, how to put this? The law is not enough. Legality is not equal morality. Legality is not equal morality. Something can be legal, but is still immoral. Slavery was legal. Colonialism was legal. So human compassion must be dominated by morality first and then legality second. If you have it upside down, there is something seriously wrong with you. This is why the whole debate over Palestine, is it a genocide, is it not genocide? Are people dying? Yes, then it's a damn genocide. It's not rocket science. Yeah, but that's not how genocide is defined by international law. Hang on a second. People dying is not enough. But, you're more concerned about what's written on a piece of paper than... But that's not what we're going to talk about. The reason why I'm bringing that up is... In 1954, a white civil rights activist, Annie Brendon and Carl Brendon, purchased a home, in the all-white Louisville suburb in Shively, Kentucky, on behalf of Andrew Wade. Now, Andrew Wade was a black World War II veteran who had been repeatedly denied housing due to racial segregation. This is a man who fought for his country. But when he came back to his country to buy a house, he was told, it is against the law for you to buy a house here. You can imagine someone pointed that out, you know what, according to the law, it is the law, therefore the law is what it is, there's nothing we can do. Does the law make sense or not? Apparently today it doesn't make sense. But it turns out in the 1950s, it did make sense. Is it like, the law is like a chameleon. Something that will never change is morality. Take for example, child abuse will never be, you can make child abuse legal. It will never be moral. You can make it legal on a national level. You can make it legal on a constituency level. You can make it legal on an international level. It will still be immoral. That's one thing I like about morality. Legality, yeah. The law must be open to the, must be open to discourse. The law must be open to discourse. Morality, on the other hand, every time you start saying, but the thing is, what if the child is, let me just stop you right there. It's a child. Yeah, but you know, when I was serving somewhere in the Middle East, there was this child that, you know, that came with, or that came to me with a grenade. What the heck were you doing there? Yeah, I was there to give the child freedom by shooting at the kid. And that's a heck of a democracy. Again, morality, for me, morality beats legality. That's it. If you are surrounded by people that prioritizes legality over morality, yeah, you are in a dangerous circle. You are in a very, 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 very dangerous circle. Because those are the people that will do the most immoral thing, and they will tell you, well, it is legal. Now, Andrew Wade, a black World War II veteran who had been repeatedly denied housing due to racial segregation. Now, Brendan's bought the house using Wade's funds and deeded it to him. So basically what this couple did was, this is a white couple, and they came across a man who was just being denied buying a house because, well, he was black. So they came along and then they just said, you know, they bought the house and then they, do you have any idea how few these people are on this planet? They, not only did they buy the house, they could have put it on their name. They could have put it on their name and then just told him, you know what? Where are you going to report this case? Wherever you're going to report, they're going to tell you that someone of your skin color is not allowed to buy a house here. So we'll just take the house. But they didn't. They even filled, you know, filled the title deed documents in the guy's name. And the so-called law caught wind of that. That couple, not only were they ostracized by their neighbors, the entire government punished them for helping. The entire government punished them for helping. So, these are the things that I sort of like find fascinating. Like, think apartheid South Africa, for example. What happened to that poor white person with compassion that, tried to help a black person? They got into trouble. Why? Because they broke the law. You're not supposed to do this to that one because, it's what the law says. Yeah, the law can be changed. And sometimes the law more often, reflects the ridiculousness of the writer. This is where I think being in a law enforcement now becomes a very interesting line of work, basically. And being a soldier. During the Nuremberg trials, a lot of Nazi sympathizers and those ones that worked in close proximity, basically to commit all those atrocities in World War II Germany, what they do? What did the soldiers say? I was just following orders. Really? You were just following orders? Now, if you can, now that's a fancy way of saying, there were laws that, there was a legal framework to my line of work. I was just doing what the law required, including a genocide. That's what the law required. Therefore, dude, it was legal. It wasn't moral. But still, I was just following orders. You are a fully grown man. You can make your own decision. This whole nonsense of, I was just following orders. Right. There's one hero in the Vietnam War, an American soldier, that disobeyed orders and actually stood in between civilians and his fellow soldiers and tell them, you guys are nuts. And because of that, they did not commit at least a massacre that they were about to commit. And when he got to the U.S., you would think he was given a medal for being an excellent life. No, he wasn't. He wasn't. He wouldn't be recognized, I think, after nearly or just after his death. That's what happens to nice guys on this planet. You're going to have to be a genocidal maniac, then you'll be recognized. If you have a nice heart, like the way, which family is this? Like the Brendan family? That's not going to work. Welcome to the world of, you know what? We are the most intelligent species on this planet as human beings. Actually, on the contrary, we are the dumbest. We are ruining the environment so we can make money. And, we kill each other so we can make money. We steal from each other so we can make money. We literally sell each other so we can make money. There is nothing we wouldn't do to each other to make money, but we are the most, we are evolved, you know, we are civilized, we are at the top of all the species. In stupidity, yeah. In greed, absolutely. Okay, it's music time.
Thank you. They told me everybody's 15 minutes in a different time zone. And since I have it at the moment, you the one I wanna shine my light on. Get your life, little mama, won't you get your life on? Ain't nothing cooler than the wrong moves when you do them to the right song, let's shoot this movie and put the shit on repeat. I hope these memories are making me fall asleep. Before we hit the road, put our phones on silent. Nobody's trying to bring sand to the beach. What would it take to change plans for the weekend? Cause I'm trying to kick it like eating. The whole thing, the pre-party, the pre-sex. Then we hit the major league with a Jesus.
Yeah, I like you, girl, in particular. You in particular. Say, I like your waist in particular. Yeah. You in particular, say, I like your waist in particular.
Screening you like una película. Baby, 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 let's steer it up. I like your waist in particular.
I like your waist in particular.
Need some help with the groceries this month? And YouSave has a competition that is just for you. Every Friday between 1 and 2 p.m., Eagle FM will be giving away a $500 YouSave voucher. To stand a chance of winning the $500 YouSave voucher, all you have to do is follow Eagle FM Namibia on Facebook, X, and Instagram, and be on the lookout for the weekly competition question. YouSave, where good food costs less.
One spot, now she found her other placement. I swear now I can't take it. Knowing somebody's got my baby, and now you ain't around, baby. I can't think. I should've put it down, should've got that ring. Cause I can still feel it in the air. See a pretty face, run my fingers through her hair. My love, my life, my shawty, my wife. She left me, I'm tight. At every turn, trying to get my usher on, but I can't let it burn. And I just hope she know that she the only one I yearn for. More and more I miss her, what will I learn? Didn't give her all my love, I guess now I got my payback. Now I'm in the club thinking all about my baby. Hey, she was so easy to love, but wait, I guess that love wasn't enough. I'm going through it every time that I'm alone, and now I'm missing, wishing she'd pick up the phone. But she made a decision that she wanted to move on, cause I was wrong. And I'm speaking about her.
Nelly with It Was Just a Dream. Yeah, sometimes when things end, it feels like that. But 12 minutes to the hour of one, you're still listening to your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and with me. And in the studio, you have yours truly, me, that is helmed. And the show is Mind the Gap. We still have 11 minutes to go off. Just let's make things up, let's mix things up a bit is what I meant to say. And by that, that pain of having your song at your fingertip, and then when you are, when you want to play it, it's, oh, yebo. Long Time No One Like You by P Square.
Oh yeah, 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 oh yeah
Finish it off with even with something more soft.
I've held it all inward. God knows I've tried. It's an awful awakening in a country boy's life to look in the mirror in total surprise. Hair on my shoulders and the age in my eyes.
fate should have made you a gentleman's wife. A man light of my life. Fate should have made you a gentleman's wife. It's a measure of people who don't understand the pleasures of life in a hillbilly band. I got my first guitar when I was 14. Well, I finally made 40, still wearing these jeans. Amanda, light of my life. Fate should have made you a gentleman's wife. Amanda, light of my life. Fate should have made you a gentleman's wife.
'74, Don Williams, Amanda, that's a remake. I just happen to, you know, I like the remake more than the original one, because that was, I mean, I like it too, but I like the, you know, the remake more. It's just a, you know, it's just preference. 3 minutes to the hour of one, so that means we have come to the end of our Mind the Gap for today, and I can't promise about next weekend. I might or might not be here, still have to figure things out. Just, you know, just want to steal me a little bit of time to breathe and do me. And then come back again as usual, but yeah. Let's wrap things up with local now, shall we?
States, yeah.
It's Mr. Legendary on the beat.
Baby, what she will like is when you move like that, like that, like that, like that, like that. Like that.
Ove Omuwa. I know. We have a commercial break coming up, and this is basically where we park the bus over here on Mind the Gap. Just enjoy what's remaining of the weekend. Drive safe. Don't drink and drive. I know we're headed towards the end of the year, and that's when things go crazy. So just stay safe.
Bargain hunters, why pay more when you can pay less at USafe stores? 4 kilos real good frozen mixed chicken portions, $194.99. 3 kilograms Polana elbow or macaroni pasta at $7.